Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Welcome back to the Common Fan Podcast. I am TJ Burkle. As always, alongside Matty Owen Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. Hey, what's more Nebraskan than football and beef? Oak Barn Beef is a family-owned farm right in Nebraska, shipping premium dry-age beef straight to doorsteps nationwide. Whether you're stocking the freezer, grilling for game day, or looking for a gift that actually impresses, Oak Barn Beef has got you covered. Check them out at oakbarnbeef.com and taste the difference of Nebraska-raised dry-aged beef. Gentlemen, I made Oak Barn Beef burger patties from delicious ground beef to watch the game last night, and they were delicious. And
as delicious. You know,
they were the only highlight of the night.
Oh, no, come on.
that sounds damn good, though. I'm not going to – I can go for
that. That's a good move.
Honest with you.
Pro move.
Good idea, yeah.
Thank you. They were delicious.
Well done.
Huskers with a disappointing 21-17 loss against USC. Felt like they kind of outplayed the Trojans for chunks of the game, parts of the game, at least.
We had them.
We're 14-6, kind of well into the third quarter. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about all of this, but just another disappointing gut punch loss.
Yeah. I felt.
Go ahead, real quick.
Right when I was walking out of the game, Owen said it too. We had him. I felt like sundown screaming at Maverick, except I was screaming at my daughter. We could have had him, Janie. We could have had him. Just screaming at him as we're walking out of the stadium. We had that thing on lock.
We did. We had him. I'm going to just put this out there. If Dylan doesn't get hurt, we win the game. If Dylan does not get hurt, I really, truly believe that we win the game.
Yeah,
just I'm not sure. Because of that consistency that he brings. I know he wasn't even getting the ball out that well or throwing the ball that well, I guess I should say.
Yeah.
But neither was, Maiava. So it's like, okay, this is going to be two teams running the ball to move the ball. And I really felt like we had him.
Yeah. I'm not sure I totally agree with that, Matty Owen. That's not a reflection on Dylan. And I will walk you through my thinking on that. But Geoff, did you want to respond to that?
I tend to lean towards Matt just from what we've seen. For whatever reason, I it's inexplicable to me, but we start off hot and we always end hot. And it's always with Dylan at the reins. So I kind of tend to agree with Matt in this situation that he probably would have found a way to win us that game, especially on that last drive. Like,
yeah, I was just saying.
But also, that is MO right there.
We talked about I don't remember what show it was in the last week or so about. I said, wouldn't it be nice to go into the into half with momentum? We did. We went down and scored, and we had the momentum at halftime. We had the juices and the vibes in the stadium were incredible. The crowd was incredible. I really think we had him. Granted, that whole sequence was terrible. Like Dylan fumbled the ball, right, and got hurt.
That's so the whole like game. Double whammy. Time right there.
Yeah, double whammy.
That was the change in the game right there. The fumble, his injury, big uncertainty in the crowd after that. I felt like there was a lot of uneasiness when he went into that tent. The people around me were a little jittery. Had the jitters after that for sure.
Yeah.
Understandable. All right. I want to talk through all this. Let's do corn cobs, gentlemen, before we get into it. And then I'll give you some big picture thoughts that we can talk about the game. Corn Cob segment is brought to you by the Nebraska Farm Bureau, the largest agricultural organization in the state with more than 56,000 members. For over a century, Farm Bureau has supported Nebraska's farm and ranch families, but their impact stretches far beyond the field. They grow leaders, amplify voices at the Capitol, and strengthen communities across our state. Agriculture is the backbone of Nebraska. When it thrives, we all thrive. Join Nebraska Farm Bureau today at nefb.org. That's nefb.org. Corn cobs, Matty-O, why don't you start us off?
I don't think I've given one to this guy yet. Especially now, he's our most important player, at least offensively, Emmett Johnson. Doc Brown, 88 miles per hour, 1.21 gigawatts. Emmett Johnson's such a stud, guys. He's second in the country right now in rushing yards. He just barely passed 1,000 yards last night.
Awesome.
We got a special guy, and even like, I'm like, how many times do we give him the ball? We need to give him the ball. He got 31 touches. Like, I don't think the argument could be like, hey, he didn't get the ball enough, but like, it's just about right. We just got to hit more passes. But Emmett Johnson should be the bell cow for this team, and especially with today's news, and which we'll get into. But Emmett Johnson should have a place in every single Husker fan's heart. That guy is an absolute stud.
29 carries for 165 yards and a touchdown on Saturday. And to you, as you said, Matty, 1,000 yards on the ground. First time a Nebraska running back has done that since 2018. So
Divine Azigbo.
Great season so far. Great season brewing for Emmett. And like you said, we're really going to need him the last three games. Geoff.
I'm going to cop out on this one. I'm going to give it to... And they're well-deserving, the fans. I was talking to these guys before started. I don't get to go to a lot of games. So when I do, it's few and far between. And I usually take, either I'm going with a friend or I take my daughter or somebody like that with me. And I got to tell you, the experience this time around with the blackout, that was a sight to behold in person. I'll tell you what, like, I'd never seen anything like that in person. I didn't even think about it, but like the black balloons. I did not even think about that until we got in there. I'm like, oh my God, we got black balloons. There's a black end on the field. Like, and everybody, it seemed like for the most part, committed to the idea. I was really worried that we were going to have, no offense to some of the old heads out there, but I was worried we're going to have some pushback and maybe a lot more red in that stadium. But for what I could tell, everybody committed to that. It was awesome. I would be on board if they made this something that we did every year. Granted, we didn't get the outcome that we wanted out of it, but that Black Sea, it was angry last night.
It was awesome. It was awesome.
It was cool. I know you were there too, Matt. I saw you. I could see Matty O down by the goalpost waving his hat in the air like this.
Oh yeah.
I thought we had it in the bag. Having two common fans in the stadium at the same time, I thought we had it. Damn it! It was not enough. It was just not enough. We were close.
Yeah.
So the fans, you get my corn cob. Well done.
They were unreal.
The Black Sea was angry that night, my friends. Yes. I love that, Geoff. I wrote about this. I was sort of like indifferent. Like, I thought, oh, that could be cool. Who knows if they're actually going to do it, whatever. When you saw it on TV, like the black uniforms, the black in the crowd, the black balloons, the black, lettering on the field, everything all together.
Yeah,
it was really cool.
Yeah,
and I think I say make it an annual thing.
Yeah, dude, it was so cool.
Yeah, neat to see.
Of course, Iowa fans have entered the chat, and apparently Huskers came out to Back in Black,
which they do as well.
Which apparently Iowa does. I can assure you that almost
unintentional.
No Husker fans are aware that Iowa comes out to Back in Black, and nobody cares. I mean, I guess unless you've been to.
I think that's more
about Iowa.
I think that says more about Iowa than us, TJ. That means I don't watch Iowa games when they're not playing Nebraska, so I don't know what they come out to.
Exactly.
They're clearly obsessed with us and watching our games, even when we have nothing to do with them right now. Yeah, so go on, Iowa.
Regardless of all that, like, I'm looking over at Matty Jr. Like, he's 13. He's like, thought it was the coolest thing ever that we switched it up for last night. And I'm like, what does it hurt? Right?
Yeah.
Talk about, and for the record, like, I'm so sick of the ranked teams thing. Like, but why not change it up once or twice? Like, we can still do our thing that we always do, but for something like that, it made sense.
I agree.
Absolutely. I'm going to give mine, guys, to Andrew Marshall, who had the big pick.
Nice pick.
And I just feel like that was representative of a phenomenal effort by the secondary in particular.
Yeah.
I thought the defense as a whole played really well, actually, guys. I mean, we couldn't stop the run. And you know, for common fans who want to complain about certain coaching decisions by the Nebraska staff, that's fair. Kind of curious why Lincoln Riley ever decided to throw the ball at all, ever.
Right.
So, like, you give up 21 points and hold one of the best offenses in the nation to well below their season averages for points and yardage. That kept, I mean, the Huskers had a chance to win. That's more than enough.
Without our starting quarterback, nonetheless. Yeah. Like, when, I mean, he went down pretty early in the third, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, anyway, we'll.
Yeah, sorry. We'll get there. So I want to corn cup to Andrew Marshall, but kind of a tip of the hat to the whole, the effort in particular against the pass, secondary.
Elite pass.
And I will say, like, Maiva wasn't particularly on his game. And I know we didn't get him on the ground, but he was definitely getting pressured.
Two groundings felt like more than
we normally do. He was getting disrupted, right?
Yeah.
More than we normally do. So I thought that was all good. I want to give you guys my big picture takeaway from this game.
Okay.
And I'm curious to see
Cubs into big picture.
Yeah.
Here we go.
I'm curious to see if you agree with this.
Okay.
I felt like it's a mixed bag from a coaching perspective. I felt like the coaches had a good plan going into the game.
Mm-hmm.
John Butler had a plan. Maiva never really got into rhythm. You knew they were going to hit some passes eventually. It took a couple trick gadget plays to even do it. They had that flea flicker. They had that trick play on their 2-point conversion. Like, it took some of that from an offense that I was coming into the game. I'll be honest, guys. I thought we had a shot to win. I was excited about the game. But in the back of my mind, there was this concern that they were going to hit a couple deep passes, just hit a couple huge plays on us before we even knew what happened. It was going to be 14-0. The crowd was going to be out of it and we would be on our way to a big game meltdown. I felt like that was on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And so we forced 2-3 and outs to start the game, went down and scored on our first possession. We held that lead well into the third quarter. And so I felt like you got to tip your cap to John Butler and even Dana Holgorsen. I think it's a little bit more of a mixed bag on offense. I mean, the defense did as well as this defense can do, I think.
We're not going to fix the run D.
We're not going to fix it in season.
It's an off-season thing that's going to have to happen.
Exactly. And so they did got beat badly on the run. They got gashed in the run, but they hung in there. They fought. They made a stop when they had to get us the ball back, to get us a chance to win the game. All these things, the defense did what they had to do. The defense did their job. The offense scored touchdowns on two of their four. They had four possessions in the first half. They scored touchdowns on two of them. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Now,
let me tell you my beef and what I think lost us the game.
Yeah.
And I think it rests on the shoulders of the coaching staff.
The referees.
I did not see that coming, Jeffrey. God, you threw me off, Jeff.
He was rolling too.
Sorry.
That's all right. It's all right. So here's, and Matteo, you said it last week after the win against Northwestern. Nothing has changed for me. We're on board with Rule.
Mm-hmm.
We should talk about the extension if we have time. We're on board with the extension. We're on board with this guy leading the program.
Yeah.
Right. All of that. But you can be in the tank, right? You can be on the team and still call out when it's not good enough and still call out when things need to be better.
That's our guy.
Exactly. Yeah. It's a family meeting.
It's a family meeting.
So
there you go.
Here's my take on what lost us the game. First three Nebraska possessions of the second half, which were basically all of our possessions in the third quarter. To me, it's inexcusable that you come out and go 3-and-out, first of all. Okay. Yeah. Even if you don't get points, you got the lead. It's 14-6 lead, and we get the ball because they took the ball at kickoff to start the game and we shut them down. Right.
Yep.
Huge.
Yeah.
So we get the ball up 14-6. Ideally, you go down and get points. But at the very least, your crowd is juiced. Like you said, Matteo, there's momentum going into the half.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do on the very first play? Deep shot to Dane Key.
Yeah.
It hasn't worked at all.
Yeah.
Michael Severa said Dylan struggles to throw the deep ball. Dane Key couldn't get separation. Key had a nice night, but couldn't get separation there. I could not hate that call more.
Yeah.
I hate that call with the fire passion valid. Of a thousand suns.
Extremely right? valid.
Second down and 10, Emmett for 8 yards.
Yeah.
And then we ran it again and couldn't get it on third down. But what if we do that 8 yard run on first down?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're on,
if you do the 8 yard run on first down, then on second and two, then try the deep ball. And on third and two, then you run it again.
Sure.
And if you don't get it, then kick it away.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but that was annoying, but that's the least of our problems, gentlemen. Mm. One play later, Andrew Marshall makes that pick.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, hey, that's just as good as if we completed the deep ball. Like we're up on the USC 30 something.
Field flip.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Yep. Great play. Yeah. Here we go. We're going to go get points. And then I want to make sure, guys, I get this right and I don't confuse it. Hold on 1 second. So that was the series. Here we go. Okay. Here we go. So, then the next three plays went like this. Emmett Johnson, 7 yard run, incompletion. Emmett Johnson, 4 yard run. Okay. It is first and 10 at the USC 23 yard line. Now you're thinking we're for sure at least getting points. A field goal.
Yeah.
Right. And we'll go up by 2 scores. Right. Again, we struggle with this all the time. It's 2025. We have a 5-star quarterback. We are going to throw the ball sometimes.
Yes, right? we are
going to throw. But in my opinion, there so far in the half, there's been 2 incompletions. In the meantime, there's been 4 Emmett Johnson runs, 3 of which went for 4, 7, and 8 yards.
Run the damn.
In my opinion, run the ball. Yeah. Run the ball until they stop you all the way into the end zone. Right?
Yeah.
And also, you've got a lead. Let's Big Ten them a little bit. I know that's not Dana's style. Let's keep taking time off the clock while we're getting
said those. The same thing to Junior last night. Why don't we Big Ten these guys a little bit tonight? It was early.
Yeah.
It was like, let's play some Big Ten ball against these guys.
Right. Instead, and again, I'm not blaming, again, at some point we're going to pass again. And like the pass protection hasn't been good all season. I'm not blaming Holgorsen for Dylan's injury, but then you have the fateful play. And, again, I'm not blaming nobody meant for Dylan to get injured, obviously, but Dylan should have just gone down. Mm-hmm. He was like, he was like trying to get rid of it or trying to throw or something. So that led to the fumble. He got twisted. His leg got twisted. The news has now come out. It's a broken
fibula.
Fibula
with an F,
which sounds painful.
It sounds like we'll see Dylan in spring ball.
I mean, even if he could be back for a bowl game, I'm not sure why.
You wouldn't. There's no reason.
So that is just infuriating. Like that was infuriating to me. And then, and it's sort of you're looking at the scoreboard.
You're looking at the clock.
We're still winning 14-6. Okay. Come on now. This feeling started to bubble up. Right.
Yeah.
But then the black shirts answered the bell again, right?
Yep.
And USC got 1 first down, but then they got to 4th and 2, and Nebraska stoned them. I mean, credit to the Huskers, who had a hard time stopping the run all night. They made a big time stop, and they got the ball back around midfield. And then you went Emmett Johnson run for 5 yards, Emmett Johnson run for 6 yards. For a first down, this is starting to sound familiar. And that was when the USC defender pushes Turner Corcoran. That was an atrocious no call, in my opinion.
It was absurd.
I mean, it looked like on the TV, it looked like Corcoran was maybe blocking his guy a little bit after the whistle, but he clearly wasn't trying to be dirty or whatever. The guy turns around and pushes him over. Todd Blackledge, I could not have disagreed more on TV. It was like, oh, that's guys just playing. Both guys did it. It was the second guy. Usually they get the second guy, but it's a good no call. I thought there should have been a flag there.
100%. And they always get the second guy. I don't care. Like, if it would have been a Nebraska player, it would have warranted the exact same thing. Like,
exactly.
It's part of the game. They always get the second guy. I don't usually get that pissed off about referees, but I was getting a little upset because that wasn't just that play. That seemed to be a consistent theme throughout the night that we were getting dogged on a bunch of different penalties.
Well, we were held on every play, but they don't call holding on us when we're playing defense.
There was
no offensive lineman in the Big Ten.
No. They're
exempt from holding calls when you're playing Nebraska.
There was a lot of holding going on. There was one, I can't remember what it was. I think it was somewhat early in USC, maybe got first down or something. The guy like reached around because in real time, I'm like, it looked like we had a beat on the quarterback. Like what happened there? And then they showed the replay and it was literally like wrapped his arm around his waist. Like, you know, so
can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
So I want some clarification. This coming from, you dudes that played on the field with referees around you. When people start chanting in the crowd, like last night, they were chanting like the refs suck, like really getting into it. As a referee, do you get pissed off and be like, you know what, I'll show these guys a thing or two. They want to mess with me. I'm throwing another flag, like that type of thing. Do you think that goes on behind the scenes? I'm just curious. I would love to,
probably.
I'd love to know, like, we're taunting these dudes and our lives are in their hands right now. Like,
yeah, but I think if they also want to, like, nothing's going to, like, God forbid anything seriously happen where a referee gets injured, but they want to make it home safely, right? So I think there are such things as makeup calls. Yes.
Sure.
So I think sometimes when a stadium that now for the second time this season has chanted refs you suck, which I've never heard before.
Yeah.
If Memorial Stadium, who's known as some of the nicest fans in college football, are chanting that, you might want to throw a flag and make a makeup call. You might want to do that. I'm just saying.
So, but here's where things got really bad, gentlemen. I rewatched, despite my standard position of not rewatching losses. I just rewatched this morning. I watched these three drives. And so I wanted to give Rule the benefit of the doubt on that first timeout call. Were we up against, was the play clock winding down? Was there something else at play that maybe nobody caught?
Yeah.
But we snapped it with about 2 seconds left on the game clock. And again, you never know if maybe the USC guys heard the whistle and stopped. It looked like it would have been a nice little run, actually. But Rule called timeout instead, apparently just to argue more on a call, the penalty non-call. Which he's right. He's right that it should have been called, but it cannot be reviewed. It cannot be overturned.
So it's a waste.
It's an absolute waste of. And on the broadcast, both announcers were like, "Whoa, what is he doing? There's seven something left in the third quarter. Why is he using a timeout here? I don't know if Pelini ever did this, but it felt like, you know, like when Pelini used to lose control and you weren't sure if he was even conscious. Like it feels like something like that. Like." Yeah.
Out of body experience.
What are we doing here? Right.
Yeah. And so I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
I was wondering why they called that timeout.
You miss things like that when you're in.
I had no idea. I'm like, what the hell is wrong here? Are we line up wrong? Or are we rethinking this? What are we doing here? I had no idea. He just spent that timeout arguing with the referees.
I mean, I'd love to. Maybe we'll hear his explanation on Monday. We'll see. But
yeah.
That's horrific. And then, Latif was in by now. You know, I think it was on third and three, and we ran a little screen pass to Emmett. I don't know. I didn't hate it, you know, but it was kind of slightly off. It looked like Emmett could have gotten it, but he had to like focus on catching the ball first. Anyway, he got a couple yards. It was fourth and one. And we lined up. I'm curious to hear what you guys thought. We lined up to go for it. And I was like, yes, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
It looked like Harbert. We were going to sneak it with Harbert or something.
And it looked like he had like five guys, not really five, but he had a ton of guys behind him. It looked like we were going to do some tush push. I will say it looked like USC had literally 11 guys on the ball. Whatever we could come up with there, even if we do a Texas, Nebraska, 1996, James Brown situation, like, either, in my opinion, you either if you want to get points, you either go for it there instead of kicking the field goal, or you decide to punt and play the field position game. But I maybe, and now I'm going to contradict myself. The field goal hit the sidebar, right? The field goal hit.
Yeah, it was right in front of me. Yeah, it was. I mean, it was 40. How long was it?
52.
40, 50?
52 yarder.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing though. Like we have a special teams coordinator who's completely turned our special teams around. If Rule went to Eckler and said, can he hit a 52-yarder? And Eckler's probably like, hell yeah, he can. Yeah. Like, what are you supposed to do? But it's not the decision to kick. It's the wasting the second timeout. Coming out to kick. That's the issue for me. If you would have said, oh, it's fourth and one, we didn't get it, field goal, go.
Yeah. But the conversation.
Because I already wasted the other one arguing the call. That was, to me, the biggest coaching mistake of the game. You can argue about play calling and all that stuff. These guys know what they're doing. Play calling and schemes and all that. They know way more than any of us do.
But not always, man. We know a lot. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
To me, it's just
I'm just kidding.
Michael Sevier used the term coaching malpractice. I think that was coaching malpractice to waste those two timeouts. You know how much we could have used those?
We could use one drive, more timeout
right at the end.
With three minutes left to go 96 yards. Like, we could have used it at least one more timeout. I mean, it helped that we had the two minute warning, whatever you call it. But like, that was a blunder. That was a coaching blunder by our guy. Again, he's our guy.
Yep.
We hopefully our guy until his contract is extended again years from now.
Yeah.
Because that means we're doing well. Yep. But we can absolutely call into question the decision making there.
Yeah.
Because it was atrocious.
We would be having a different convo though. If like, what if we would have gone for it and then we wouldn't have gotten it. The thing I would have immediately gone to is we would have been saying, we have a special teams unit that's saving us this year. Why the hell would we go for a 52 yard field goal?
Right.
So I get why we went for it. I just, like you said, Owens, it was just the blunder beforehand. It's just, it taints the whole thing. Makes it look terrible.
Well, and you kind of, you're effectively not really, I mean, maybe not, but you're kind of like, hey, let's take a timeout. But you basically iced your own kicker. Before his career long. I don't know if he's kicked a longer one than that, but like, I don't love that. Again, if you're going to kick it and go up 11 points. I love going up 11 points.
Yeah. Yeah.
But be decisive about it. Don't waste the damn timeout.
I felt like eventually their offense was going to figure something out. We weren't going to hold them to 6 points. Obviously,
right.
We didn't. And so it's just so critical to me. That's why I think that decided the game. Those first three possessions, two of which came from awesome defensive, a pick and a turnover on downs. And then we got nothing. To me, that's the game right there. Five plays later, after we missed the field goal, they go down and score. They get the 2-point conversion to tie it. I want to say this, though, too. Credit to, like, Nebraska fought their asses off.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't give up.
They did not give up. And then we went with Latif at the helm. Hasn't played since West Jesus State, and he leads, we go down and get a field goal and we go up 17-14. And like, it felt like they were being pretty conservative in playing, calling plays for Latif. I've seen some criticism on social media about that. Look,
yeah, come on.
He probably hasn't gotten a ton of reps lately.
Yeah.
And with the reps he has gotten are probably not, quite for his skill set.
I thought it was good.
They called a couple RPOs that he kept, like they weren't being totally scared.
He can move.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and they battled. And then again, like then USC takes the lead 21-17. Then whatever we did, we didn't get it. And then, USC has the ball. Time is winding down. Like when they first got the ball back with like 7 minutes left to go in the game, when they're up 21-17, I was like, well, this isn't so bad. Like there's plenty of time left. And like the clock kept running. I was like, oh God, like, are we going to be able to, are we even going to make this interesting? And then we get a stop and we get the ball. And three minutes is plenty of time to go down the field. Again, that, who knows if we would have gotten it anyway, that very last play where Emmett slipped. I mean, I'm not putting one thing on Emmett. The guy has carried the entire season. I don't know where this team would be without Emmett Johnson. And you got a quarter, they're not used to working together, right? They're not used to playing together. And Latif afterward, said he screwed up his footwork. Maybe that's true. Maybe it's just one of those unfortunate things. I'm not putting that on anybody. But we, that would have been a second. I mean, Emmett was totally going to get that. And that would have been a second first down. And you got you're a little under 2 minutes to see what you can do. So they didn't quit at all. And I mean, rules teams generally have not quit no matter what's been going on. Go ahead.
To me, though, that ending sequence there, that final drive that we had, did we have one timeout left? Because we had already burned two.
We had one and the two minutes.
We had a 2 minute timeout. Was it just me, or did it seem like during that last 3 minutes and 30 some odd seconds, there was no sense of urgency coming up to that 2 minute
before
timeout?
Before the 2 minute warning,
I felt like we burned off like timeout, a minute I didn't think 30 they were, of just I didn't think
they were. Yeah, I didn't think they were going quick enough. Like before the 2 minute, go get as much as you can before you get that automatic timeout. And then you still have one in the bank, I think, did at the time. Yeah,
that it was didn't a little feel frustrating. Like it was.
But it's also a true freshman quarterback playing in the biggest game of his career so far that was thrust into duty unexpectedly. So, it'd be nice to rush, but you could also rush a true freshman into a mistake.
Yeah.
So I don't put a ton of that, but I felt a little bit of the same way.
We have to talk about, you know, the quarterback situation now and look forward a little bit. But I just like, I just curious, I don't know, just like, let's do final takes. Like, I was pretty angry after the game.
You're angry just, after every game when we don't
win. I know. But it just, and again, I don't know. I think there's honestly an argument to be made for feeding Emmett even more. It felt like there was, I think it was our second drive where we gave it to him three times in a row and we didn't get, like, that was the only time he was really stonewalled. He was getting 4, 5, 8 yards a carry. It's really, even before Dylan got hurt, I'm so tired of seeing the fade balls, the one-on-one jump balls.
Yeah.
Like,
don't work.
And also the first drive or two, and maybe not the second drive, but the first drive, we were hitting some short, quick passes and our guys looked pretty wide open.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. Maybe they adjusted their defense. It's hard to tell on TV, but it's sort of like, where does that go? I don't know. It feels like Dana is running a slightly modified version of Marcus Satterfield's offense. I do think
a lot like that.
The offense is just lacking an identity.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Graham laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Graham keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit LGUSA.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Graham laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.
And we have Dylan, and we have better wide receivers than we've had in a long time. And we have Emmett, who's the best running back we've had. You could argue he's the best running back we've had since Amir. And the O-line is worse than we thought it would be, for sure. It feels like the offense, I saw a tweet yesterday that they've now, 4 out of the last 5 games, we've been under 300 yards total.
Yeah.
And it feels like the offense is just lacking an identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know how you, I don't know if you can fix that in season, but, and I don't, Holgorsen is definitely like, you have to, I know, we all know Holgerson's an upgrade from Marcus.
Yeah. Sanders. We know what know he can that do. Means.
Do we go back to the drawing board completely in the off season? Or like, do we need to money whip some offensive linemen because we're not winning the line of scrimmage? Like, I don't know what it is, but the offense, even with the step back on defense, I would argue the defense is doing enough.
Yeah.
To keep us in most of these games.
So the remedy is to let Dana run his offense. Why is there an answer as to why we're doing it this way? Does anybody know? Like, I don't get that.
I'm kind of with you. Like, if you've watched Dana's offenses over the last 15 years, like, there are guys running wide open, like, consistently. Like, I don't know if that's just, like, that's kind of what I was expecting this season in his offense to look more like. Just, like, mm-hmm. tons of crossing routes and slants and mesh concepts. And then you pop one deep. And then, like, and I get that maybe you can't, and I don't know enough about football. But maybe with a guy like Emmett, you can't necessarily run the same type of thing. Cause when you run it, like, I remember his offense, there's a lot of the running backs, was a lot of draws and a lot of, you know, but Emmett can do that. But I guess also you want to make sure you're getting him the ball in good run plays too, that are specifically designed for him. So I don't know if there's, and maybe they've been trying to marry those things, but if that's what they've been trying to do, they've been doing it unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
So, and that leads to me, like, the lack of identity. To me, the identity now is, like, let's give it to Emmett and then, I guess, just figure it out if that doesn't work. Like, that's what it feels like. I know that's not what it is. I'm not an idiot. But, like, it's just like, okay, we have the identity. We have one thing that we can do well, and that's giving the ball to Emmett.
Right.
Beyond that, what is it? What do we do?
Right, right.
Well, it's, now, so, and it's such now, a hodgepodge of, like, different concepts and zone and motions and things, and it's like, okay, what, I can't even explain, like, okay, what is Nebraska's offense? Is it an RPO offense? Is it, do they spread it out? Is it air raid?
Is it a pro style?
I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I guess pro style.
I mean, I guess technically, I don't know. Yeah, right. No, and now everything's in flux with, you know, with Dylan being out for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think they're going to, you know, I am hopeful. Hold on. We'll go there in a second. Let me make one point. Last night was a gut punch.
Mm-hmm.
It was so disappointing. We've seen this movie before, but it is really interesting. You have some people at like the far reaches of the universe on Twitter just basically being like, is it even worth it? Is this even worth it? And Nebraska does it again. So fitting. Well, and if you feel that way, that's fine. It is fine to feel despondent that the Huskers missed a huge opportunity to win a big game under the lights at Memorial Stadium, on NBC, all those things, right? But I think there's just as many or more people, on at least on social media, kind of saying, like, as you said, Matty-O, like, yes, there were coaching mistakes, but losing your starting quarterback absolutely is a factor.
Yeah.
It's a different game after. Right?
Any team in the country, you lose your starting quarterback, you know, 3-4 minutes of game time into the third quarter, good luck the rest of the way. You're only up 8 points. Well,
and
good luck.
Pritchett got hurt. We have yet to see the extent of his injury.
That's three tackles right now that are out. Prohaska, Gatula, who I didn't know was out.
Right.
And now Pritchett. Hopefully he's healthy enough to come back and play.
So, I actually thought that, honestly, you could say this about, I think Northwestern and USC have been the two of the offensive line's best games.
Yeah.
We
didn't throw the ball well, but neither did USC, which I don't know if it was just like that kind of night, but like we ran the ball well enough to win the game.
Ran the ball well in both games, and Dylan was, you know, generally it felt pretty well protected in both games. Obviously the one time he got sacked against USC was worst possible case scenario.
was the worst possible thing that could happen.
Right. they're 6-3. A lot of people predicted 8-4. I was laying in bed last night. I was laying with the boys last night. I think I texted you guys this. Hudson was asleep and Michael and I were watching the World Series on my phone, actually. But I was just like laying there and I think I told you guys this. I'm going to be at the UCLA game. We're going. They're going to get out of school a little bit early on Friday. We got a direct flight from Bend over to Burbank. We're going to stay a mile from the Rose Bowl. We're going to stay in Old Town Pasadena. And on Saturday night, I'm going to be at the Rose Bowl watching Nebraska
play. That is amazing.
You know, and so, and like with my boys in the way that I did with my dad, you know? And so like, nothing is over.
No.
Nothing is over here. No. Like, you know, like we got three games left to play. And we got a bowl game to play, you know? And at some point, you know, Chattel had it in his column. At some point, We're gonna win some of these games, right?
Yes, yeah.
Ranked opponents. But in the meantime, I think we can beat UCLA. I think we can beat UCLA with our second team quarterback. I think we can. I mean, I think I think all bets are off now. Like on the rule year three leap, it will be judged differently now. It has to be, right. But I think it will really help his cause if he can win at least one more game.
Yeah,
you know, if they find a way to win two more with the backup quarterback, then I think everyone's feeling really good, right?
Right.
You know, two more before the bowl game. But like, I think we can beat UCLA. And like, again, I know I kind of said this already. Every team's can have their complaints, right? I think if Lincoln Riley had decided to run the ball all night, we might have lost by two or three touchdowns.
Yeah.
Right? Good.
Yeah.
They got their first field goal. They went right down the field, run after run after run, 10 yards, 15 yards, 20 yards, first and goal at the 7. They decide to start throwing it up.
Big brain.
And they were helped by by a penalty too, but we helped them do a field goal.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so like, he's considered one of the best offensive minds in the game. He's considered one of the best coaches in the game. I think USC fans would have plenty to complain about with him after that game, you know? So we all have those things. Again, I think it's fine if Husker fans are furious. And I've been, you know, floating between like furious and, well, here we go. We've got three games left kind of thing.
Perspective is a thing.
It's just like, I just don't understand the kind of thought of like, season's over. It's not worth it. This, that, like, what are you talking about? Yeah. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Nobody, if you going into the USC game felt like Nebraska was a playoff team, then
delusional, man.
I'm sorry, but you're delusional.
Oh, yeah.
In theory, yes, a 2-loss Big Ten team could be considered for the playoffs. So in theory, they had a chance to win out and get to the playoff. But come on, man, this is like there's a lot.
You know what we've seen?
There's a lot that's better. It's not a playoff team. We know that, right?
Don't be willfully ignorant, Husker fan. Don't be willfully ignorant.
I think this could be like, and I wouldn't be surprised if with Coach Rhule does this. You lose your leader, you know, Dylan's probably our leader, right? He's the face of the program. If it's not Coach Rhule, you can use that as a rallying point for your team. Sometimes there's a little relief. And then honestly, I thought about this afternoon. I'm like, you know, that's kind of a little relief. Like now we just get behind the whole freaking team and try to get behind this young true freshman and see what he can do and just do enough to help us get a win or two. Yeah. And I kind of love that. You're backed into a corner. Let's see what you got. And it goes to the Husker fans too. The Husker fans, Jeff, you're absolutely right. We totally brought it last night. And in that atmosphere, it's disappointing to not win a game like that when it just felt like it was all lining up for it. Mm. But damn it, we are still some of the best damn fans in the country. So now we got the next three games. Yeah, I know the next two are on the road, but Husker fans are traveling. TJ and UCLA, whoever's going to Penn State. I'm going to be at the Iowa game. Let's get behind our guys. We got our coach. We got our guys. Don't be the guy that's like, oh, season's over. Because I can't stand that guy.
Well, and Maddie, I was going to say something and I lost it. Come on.
I'm sorry.
No. It wasn't you.
It was your positivity.
I know I was going to say not. So maybe not relief, but it's freeing in a sense.
Freeing. Yeah.
No one's relieved.
Freeing. No, not relieved. It's a little bit but freeing. Yeah.
It's freeing.
It's way better term.
Because I think that expectations are different.
Yeah.
No one's going to like
underdogs.
Like, they're probably going to be underdogs the rest of the year. I think they're already, UCLA is already favored.
Rhule's great as a dog.
Right. And I also, like, I really want to see what they can do with a full week of prep for a Latif-led offense. Because you know it's going to be different.
Yep.
And it may work. I think it works to our advantage, at least against UCLA. Because we can put some stuff out there that we have not put on tape at all.
Yeah. You'd be a run game.
Right? It's going to be hard for them to prep for, I think.
Different dynamic. That adds a dynamic to our offense that nobody's ever seen yet. So that'll be kind of interesting.
And he's got a rocket, guys. Like, he needed, like, I was like, whoa, the young fella's pumped up. Like, some of those passes were just like lasers. Yep. Like, you just got to put a little bit of touch under those, but he can get the ball out.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you guys this. Nebraska's 6-3. They go at UCLA, at Penn State, home against Iowa, Black Friday. Mm-hmm. There's a bye week in there before Penn State, I think. What should expectations be now? And what's a success versus what's a failure?
They've completely changed. They've been changing week to week, right? Like, at least for me, the expectation is like, okay, now here's what I think the best is that we can do, right? I think we can, I still think we can steal one at UCLA. All the reasons you just
I don't even know. I mean, I have no, they're such a hard program to figure out. They're bipolar, but I don't even know if it would be stealing it if we won.
No. And then, Penn State, like, I mean, they got beat fairly handily yesterday. Did they not? Like,
they did.
Like,
yeah. They did.
Yeah.
They were in it for a while.
But you wonder how much they're going to still be into it by the time we play them in a few weeks. Right.
And then Iowa.
And it's rivalry game. Throw everything out the window against Iowa. Like, I actually think, like, if we can, this is crazy to say, if we can stop the run somewhat, we can beat Iowa, period.
Yeah.
No. If we can hold Iowa to under 150 yards rushing, we will win that game.
Yeah. I mean, Penn State's after playing number one Ohio State this weekend, they've got number two Indiana next weekend. And then they're at Michigan State, and they don't have a bye like we do. They're at Michigan State right before we come to town. So you just never know, like, what headspace they're going to be in about their program. I guess if they beat Michigan State, they'll have four wins with two games to play, so they'll still have something to play for. I'm certainly not, like we've said before, I don't care what kind of dumpster fire that's been this season.
They've got Penn State players, Penn State athletes.
So
let's actually, I hate 11 a.m. kickoffs. I wouldn't mind that one being 11 a.m. Let that sleepy Happy Valley 11 a.m. crowd get in there. I think that could help. I'm just saying.
For sure. Here's what I think. I think if Nebraska loses out, I think Rhule's going to get some criticism, probably deserved, even with the Latif or even with the Riola situation.
He should.
I think if they can even get one, right? Beat UCLA, let's say, go 7-5. I think people will say, hard to know how this would have gone with a healthy Riola and whatever. If they somehow, like, beat UCLA and beat Iowa or something, then I think everyone's feeling really good, right? I think no matter what, though, guys, here was I texted you guys this. Skurs News, at Skurs News on Twitter, which is a pretty good follow, had this, I think it was last night. If this team ends up 6-6 again, Rhule is going to have some major self-reflection to do with himself as a head coach and the type of staff he needs to really get this program where he wants it to be. Right now, I can't say there is one assistant who I would hate to lose. I'm not sure I agree with that last part, especially Eckler.
No, yeah, you got it. Don't agree with that at all.
Right. But I think what's interesting, I think the point about that one to me is 6-6, 9-3, somewhere in between. I think this what we've seen enough this year to think, I think there's some more reflection that has to be done. Right.
Yeah.
I think Rhule has shown he can win big. He's shown he can complete the turnaround. I don't think we're going to get whatever we end up at this year. I don't know that it will qualify as a typical Matt Rhule year three leap. As we've discussed many times, college football is totally different. The Big Ten is totally different now. But I do think you have to step back and say, okay, what do we want the identity of our offense to be? Why are we, like Jake Butt said this, and Andy Staples, who I sometimes find to be just trolling Nebraska fans.
Yeah.
I saw a little clip of what he said and I was ready to be angry. I actually agreed with most of it. He basically said, things are better for the most part. Nebraska's still losing at the line of scrimmage. Rhule wants it. You know, Rhule understands you have to win at the line of scrimmage, but they're not right now.
Yeah.
And that's basically the same thing Jake Butt said too, right?
Yeah.
Like quarterback plays better. You know, we talked about this last week. A lot of things are better, but to win in the Big Ten and to win in big time college football, you have to win at the line of scrimmage. And then you can throw it up if you want to, or you can run it if you want. You can do whatever you want when you're winning at the line of scrimmage. And so I think there's going to be a lot but I also think hopefully, okay, Rhule, you got your extension. You've now publicly stated you're committed to being here.
Mm-hmm.
Team got to a bowl game for a second year in a row. Hopefully the regular season record is better than it was a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They have to factor in the Dylan injury, depending on what that final record is. But I think, you know, you have to continue to evolve. And I don't think that, you know, you can't just say we're going to run it back again. I think, you know, I don't know. Do we reevaluate the O-line coach? Do we reevaluate scheme on offense? Do we reevaluate anything on defense? I mean, I think everything needs to sort of be on.
It should all be on the table.
Right?
Yeah. I a common fan who will remain nameless hit me up a little while ago and they go, the injury for Raiola is terrible, obviously, but does this give Nebraska the opportunity to maybe, I don't want to say fire, but work around with Donovan a little bit? You know what I mean? Because I think that's the main thing is I think we've got Raiola under center and then we feel like we have to have Donovan there. They come as a pair to me. I feel like there's a lot of fear and anxiety of can they get rid of that guy? Because clearly the consensus is that the O-line is the problem. That's our problem right there.
Would this be an opportunity
to take that step?
I don't know that it's the coaching as much as it's the Jimmies and the Joes, honestly.
Yeah. Gotcha.
I mean.
But who's responsible for the Jimmies and the Joes? Did you hear me, Matteo? So I just said, who's responsible for the Jimmies and the Joes?
You froze there.
Oh.
No.
Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Well, that's a recruiting thing, but you know, also there's a few guys that have been there for years. Like, God love him. He played hard last night and he always plays hard, but Turner Corcoran has been for years and he's been flopped around almost every position on the line.
Right.
That is the trenches are something you have to build over time. Like Michigan, how they just handled us in the trenches. They've been building that since when did Harbaugh get there? Cause that's when it started. We're a little bit behind everybody else in terms of that. It's not something where you can, the portal does not provide to me, O and D linemen as much as it does receivers and skill positions and DBs. Those guys are dime a dozen. Good luck finding, you know, an interior D line or O line or left tackle or something in the portal that's going to be plug and play. Line play is built. It is not something you can fix in the offseason. That is something that to me takes years to establish your line of scrimmage. And something that's encouraging to me is on the defensive side, we're so young. So those guys are, and they're pretty dang athletic and pretty good. Keona Davis and Williams Winery, I keep calling him Willie. Keona and Willie are going to be studs. They're already pretty dang good. But once you get them in the program, get them the experience, have them feel a little bit of pain and taking a loss in a big game. That stuff goes a long way and it matters. Okay. Nash and Ty, that didn't happen overnight. We talked about it the other day. Like Nash was like his fifth year, or Ty was like his fifth year here before. He's like, oh my God, this guy's really good. Like he was all right before that. It was about
fourth or fifth year.
Exactly. But yeah, it took him, a while to be dominant. Like I think mm-hmm. that's just what we have to expect is we have to keep getting these guys in and building them and developing them. That's how we're going to have success. That's how we had it back in the day. That hasn't changed. I think the trenches have changed a bit. Like you have to build that. And that has to be your identity. You want to talk about identity, make that the identity. We have the best offensive and defensive line. And from there, you're golden. Look at Iowa. Yeah, like, every year, probably the best offensive line in the Big Ten. Who's their running back? Don't know. Doesn't matter. It could be any guy. There's two or three guys they have every year. They're running behind that line. So they look like studs. Like that's what we need to be. And I'm not saying be Iowa because I don't want to be Iowa in terms of everything else. But you have to build that identity in the trenches. Yep. That's how we're going to be long-term successful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hopefully we can supplement that building process or even expedite that building process through the transfer portal. Because that was an option.
Trying, right.
I know they're trying. They did this, you know, Pritchett and Rocco on the offensive side. They brought in a couple guys on defense. And that hopefully I read somewhere, I think part of Rule's deal, I don't know if it's in writing in the contract, but part of Rule's deal was some assurances on, you know, funding for players.
More cash.
In this crazy world that we live in.
Gotta do it.
But yeah, exactly. So
the last thing, TJ, the original question that you asked is what's our ceiling? What are we looking at here? What's considered a success? We gotta get to 8 wins. That's my 7's not good enough, in my opinion, as far as a leap goes. We have to win 2 of our last 3. Now, can we do that? I don't know. The way this team plays now, I have no clue whether or not we're gonna even win 1 more game. But I'll tell you this. You got to get to 8. I don't think 7 is going to be considered a quote unquote leap year for Matt Rhule or a success for the fan base in general.
Jeff, what about 7-5 and a bowl win? So 8-5.
Okay, I'll take that. I will take that. I think the fans will take that too, but I don't know. I feel like just the way, and we've talked about this before, a leap just sounds just like, I think we just all had it in our, we were talking 10-2 for a while there before the season started. That's a leap. You know what I mean? Like, 8-4, 7-5, not really leap standards in my opinion. So we'll see how we do the rest of the year. But I don't think winning 1 more game doesn't cut it for the majority of the fan base, in my opinion.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think
I'm not gonna fire him by any means, but I just
think I think there are some fans who are really angry and they want a reason to be angry. And if we go 7-5 or 6-6, they're gonna continue to be angry. 8-4,
no matter what.
8-4 with your backup quarterback, it'd be hard for anybody to say that's a failure.
Yeah,
right.
If you can't be excited about that, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right, real quick, guys. I think we've probably laid most of them out, but you want to do reasons for optimism, reasons for concern? I'll lay out a reason for concern. Dylan Raiola is out for the year.
Thanks, JJ.
I'll tell you a reason for concern, damn it. I know we said it's not going to get fixed during the season, but our run D is atrocious.
Oof.
Like we know and we know it's atrocious. Like it's at this point it's like, okay, well, it wasn't like 1 or 2 games, like it's bad, okay? And I just wish that we could figure out something like a band-aid to put on that thing just to get through this season.
Yep.
That really, really, and I said it a couple episodes ago, I think John Butler needs to go to like zone run defense, like defense school in the offseason or something, because it's not good. And everybody runs that stuff. And and even people that don't run it are going to see how much we struggle against it and they're going to run it. So we got to fix that. That's a reason for concern for me. And I'm going to follow right back and give you a reason for optimism. I think TJ Lateef can be a pretty good quarterback. I'm excited to see what he can do when he knows he's going to be the starter. It's a totally different animal than you're in the third quarter against a ranked team in the biggest game of your life, and you're thrust into duty.
I agree.
Totally different animal.
That never happens. You know what I mean? Like every other team always has this situation where the starting quarterback goes out, but then they have this backup that just balls out of their ass out of nowhere. Well, let's just have that happen to the Huskers for once. Like that would just be great. And you're right, Owen. It's like having a full week of coaching where he's going to be the starter adds a different dynamic of mobility to our offense that we didn't have before. So that's a positive concern. We saw it in our text thread earlier, just the coaching mismanagements and just, you know, just using timeouts to talk things through or unnecessarily using a timeout to argue with a referee. We got to clean that stuff up. And I'll never say, I don't care what people do with their own personal time, but, you know, coach rule, maybe we need to focus on the team a little bit here, man. Maybe lay off a McAfee, lay off the podcast for a little bit. Let's get back to the team here. I like you, coach, but let's bring it back in, get back to what you're actually here for.
I think that's totally fair. I think it's a lot valid. Of people are saying that. It's totally valid. And a lot of people are saying that. I think that's totally fair, Geoff. I'll end with, I was going to say, it's been said a lot, especially over the last 10 years, of when players make mistakes on the field, people say, Nebraska's not good enough to overcome mistakes like that. We don't have enough talent. We're not so much more talented than most of the other teams that we play that we can overcome mistakes like that. The same is true of coaching mistakes. We're not like the margin is thin. Like Rule himself has talked about the thin line that we're going to have to learn how to win close games. Mm-hmm. And so I'll be anxious to see how he talks about it. I think generally speaking, he's pretty good at taking accountability most of the time.
Yeah, for sure.
But, I think the game management stuff, the timeout stuff, that's not necessarily intuitive. There have been other head coaches who are not automatically good at that stuff. So I don't know, in this world of hiring whoever you want, however many staffing personnel you want, just hire somebody who's a specialist in that stuff. Or so, like, there's got to be a way.
Where's my clock management guy?
Yeah,
get his ass over here.
Right, exactly. But they've got to figure it out. And like to your guys' point, when you get the ball with 3 minutes and you know you're probably not going to, like the Chiefs not going to be throwing darts all over the yard and you're probably going to have to rely on the run game, maybe pick it up a little bit. Like just different things like that where it feels like, come on, guys.
Sure.
Yeah. I'll say a reason for optimism that we already kind of talked about is, again, in no universe does anybody want Dylan Raiola to be hurt. We hope and pray for a very quick and speedy and healthy recovery and all those things.
For sure.
But the silver lining, if there is anyone, is they're like, here we go. Like there's zero, you're definitely not in the playoff now. There's no Big Ten team getting to the playoff. You're not in the playoff and your quarterback's out for the season. Those are bad things, but it's kind of freeing in a way. And just go, you're not going to be favored probably in any game the rest of the year. Just you're totally free to go play football.
That is good.
And let's go win some games. We're not supposed
nothing to lose.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. That's a pretty sick reason for optimism.
But. Hey, I like it. You get a little for the silver linings.
You got to find it.
That's right. That's right.
I got two.
All right, go.
Well, and I
for more.
The one just left. One just left. But guess what we have next week?
8 o'clock. Big Ten
after dark.
Yeah, no kidding.
Can you believe it?
Off to 8 o'clock Central Time.
Can you believe it? Weird things happen, like a road Nebraska win in the Rose Bowl. Weird things can happen. Big Ten after dark.
I'm gonna be there for every minute of it, boys.
Yeah.
All right, Common fans.
Totally erotic.
Well, on that note, I'm.
I mentioned McAfee before. He always stands during his podcast. I'm standing for this one for you YouTube watchers right now. I what do you guys think? I kind of like this setup here. I like the standing.
I don't mind it.
The spot where I usually have it set up it's covered in laundry right now, the pool table. So I'm standing in the base. I kind of like it. It gives me a little bit more movement here.
It's probably good for your back.
Throw my arms a little bit. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Please just don't take off your shirt, Jeff.
No promise. We'll see.
We'll see. Yeah, maybe next week.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, Common fans, well, it's like we said after Minnesota.
I know. I remembered it. I remembered the thing that I forgot. There's another reason for some added excitement these last three games. We have a bet on the Huskers win total at 7.5. The podcast.
We do. Collectively. That's right. The collective podcast has it.
Now, Jeff hasn't put in his money yet. So
that's right. I still owe you some winnings, dough for that.
But yeah, if we get that eighth win, that means the Common fans get a little scratch.
Hey, and 1-800
actually, we just break even. We break even because we also put some money in that they'd make the CFE. So
just 1-800 bets off for anyone who's struggling. Jeff, go ahead.
And Matt is just dragging us down into the depths of his dirty gambling. Like I'm a clean guy. I try to keep my nose clean. Matt's just pulling me down into the dark depths here.
Jeff, it's not even like that anymore. Look around, Jeff. Draft, you know, halftime show sponsored by FanDuel. You know, pregame show sponsored by DraftKings. It's not what it used to be.
That's what they want you to believe, Matt. That's what they want you to believe. But Jeff, that's not an excuse for not paying, Jeff.
Well, I'm going to pay. Yeah. All right, I'll pay. Yeah.
For those who don't know, you won't be surprised by this. GF is always the last one to pay his fantasy football dues.
Yeah.
I was one of the first ones this year.
By the time GF plays, he's already out of contention. So
you got to get me that money, Jeff, before the Iowa game, or I'll have your legs broken.
See, this is the gambler in him. It's coming out.
I'll send Rocco over.
All right, Common
Luca
fans.
Brasi.
Well, we got to flush it. With all the pain and anguish, so we got no choice
but boys.
Put one foot in front of the other and move forward and get back on the saddle for UCLA on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Hey, Common fans, be kind to each other. We will be back at you midweek. In the meantime, as always, GBR for life.
Holy moly! Man, woman, and child did that. Put them in the aisles.
And Nebraska takes the lead. And the national championship is Nebraska's.
Did you know Microsoft has officially ended support for Windows 10? Upgrade to Windows 11 with an LG Gram laptop. Voted PC Mag's Reader's Choice Top Laptop Brand for 2025. Thin and ultra lightweight, the LG Gram keeps you productive anywhere. And Windows 11 gives you access to free security updates and ongoing feature upgrades. Visit lgusa.com/iHeart for great seasonal savings on LG Gram laptops with Windows 11. PC Mag Reader's Choice used with permission. All rights reserved.